When the Metropolitan Museum of Art was putting together its first collection of paintings in 1871, it was important for its reputation to amass works that would impress New York society. And that's why many of those early acquisitions were from the golden age of Dutch painting. Now the museum has organized an exhibition of all of its paintings from that period. The Age of Rembrandt is on display at the Met until January 2008. And here to talk about it is Walter Liedtke, the Met's curator of European paintings. I'm very pleased to welcome him back to the show. Hi.
Thank you. Very happy to be here.
Is this the first time all of the Met's paintings from this period have been shown together?
Yes, absolutely. It's hard to do with 228. And in our four galleries, we normally have about 80 on view.
So the rest are in the warehouses? Storage spaces?
There's a storage which is actually right off the main Dutch galleries. And then there are two collections, Linsky and Lehman, which have significant Dutch works, and they need to stay together.
Because that was, those are the grounds.
Request, yeah.
So you have 228 works. How many painters represented?
99.
That means a fair number of them will be relatively obscure today. Were they obscure in 1871?
Well, I think maybe certainly a dozen were familiar to New York collectors, and maybe twice that would be now. It depends whether you're from Holland or not, I suppose.
Are all of these painters from the 17th century?
All but eight of the paintings in the exhibition, right.
Is it rare in art history for a small country like the Netherlands to have three of the greatest painters in art history working at the same time?
I think that great artists come out of somewhere, and they need some social foundation for that to happen. And, of course, this was the first great market for private works of art that were meant for middle-class homes. And so it was very much an art market which supported these peaks of Rembrandt, Hals, and Vermeer.
Vermeer, even then, in 1871, wasn't he just starting to be appreciated?
Yeah, that's true for Vermeer. Yeah, I was referring to the 17th century and how prominent people emerge out of some context.
Was Hals considered... Hals has gone into a decline in over the years, although the reviews of the show indicate that people are ready to recognize that he was a really great artist once again.
He ebbs and flows. The thing about Hals is he's dominantly a portraitist. He did some genre paintings, too. In his own day, of course, he was from Haarlem near Amsterdam in the Netherlands. And so he was not that well known until Courbet, Manet, and other painterly painters picked him up as a model.
Were a lot of paintings from this period on the market at the time that the Met was
opening? That's a very important part of the story, because we speak frequently in terms of American taste and 19th century painters that were interested, but the supply side is a key factor, and the Franco-Prussian War had a major impact in Europe, so there were European works flooding onto the market.
And I assume there were even more Rembrandts that Rembrandt painted at that time.
Sometimes I say when the demand goes up, the supply goes up, and there were a good number of 19th century imitations. But that notion was much more common amongst Rembrandt scholars in, say, the 1960s. And we now know that I would say 95% of the paintings that are not by Rembrandt but were once called Rembrandt are actually from his own time.
And some of them are wonderful paintings. There's a painting of a woman cutting her fingernails.
Yeah.
That's been one of my favorites for years. And whether it's by Rembrandt or somebody else.
Majestic, powerful, large painting by, most likely by a minor artist from Dordrecht called Abraham van Dyck, who in turn's a pupil of Nicholas Maas, who was a pupil of Rembrandt. And no one would doubt that as a Rembrandt when it was bought around 1905.
Well, the Met had an exhibit in 1995 examining Rembrandt's paintings and comparing them to those that were most likely fakes. Some of them seem really obvious, some don't.
Yeah, of course, you don't quite mean that word fake, but they're not by... They were not...
Well, misattributed.
Yeah.
But in some cases, forgeries. In other cases, just misattributed.
Well, actually, there might be one case, but it's a case of about 1,700. We have 20 Rembrandts, I think, 20 paintings which are by his immediate pupils and followers, and two that are just slightly later than Rembrandt's lifetime.
Was there any sculpture of note produced during this time? Because this is an exhibit of paintings, and I'm not sure I even know of any sculptors from the Netherlands.
Compared to other countries, no. And that's partly, I suppose, the absence of stone, but also demand. There's the great ships had those wooden figures on them and so on. But there is important tomb sculpture, and that's the most you can say.
My guest is Walter Liedtke, who is the curator of European paintings at the Metropolitan Museum of Art. There is an exhibit there that runs through January called The Age of Rembrandt, featuring over 90 artists and 228 works, some of which, by the way, you can see on our website. We have a slideshow of some of the highlights of the exhibit. One of the highlights of the Metz collection is that you have five of only 36 known Vermeers in the world.
That's right.
Yeah. Were any of these in the original collection?
No, not in the 1871 purchase, but the next significant moment in the collection, there's quite a gap, and then Henry Marquand, our second president, gives 37 Old Master paintings in 1889, and with those is America's first and most beloved Vermeer, the woman with the water pitcher.
Now, you said you refer to it, and it's always referred to as the 1871 purchase. What does that mean? The Met didn't buy these paintings.
Well, they did in a way. Our vice president, William Bludgett, who was a collector of American art and wealthy man, retired in Paris, although functioning on our board, and he buys 174 European paintings in Paris during that summer for $100,000, ships them home. The president of the board, Johnston, goes in halves on the purchase, and then the board of trustees votes to acquire the whole thing. At the time, the museum had no building and one sarcophagus, so it was a deliberate effort to jumpstart the whole collection.
And there's, and you presented these works in an interesting way, not in any kind of chronological order that we might expect, or by style or by painter, but by when they were purchased.
It's funny, a lot of people remark on that, and I always felt rather intuitively it was the one interesting thing to do, because we're too sophisticated to do a general Dutch show. If we did, we'd borrow major works to, you know, from the Netherlands or whatever.
Or right down the road, down Fifth Avenue, the Frick has some pretty incredible ones.
But I think, you know, New York doesn't need a show that demonstrates the scope of 17th century Dutch art, but what some Americans are unfamiliar with is how great cultural institutions come into being. And it's so different than the European story.
When the works were first exhibited, how were they received by New York society?
I believe it was March of 1872, the first show ever at the Met, which was actually in a dancing academy on Fifth Avenue, grand ballroom, and it was a major event.
Do you think that because Dutch art comes out of a merchant society, mostly Protestant, that New York, which was a merchant city, mostly Protestant at the time, felt some special kind of connection?
There's a broad truth to that, and a lot of people at the time articulated it, and there's a negative side to that in a sense that they didn't want any imagery which referred to monarchies or the Catholic Church, because we considered ourselves, for the most part, rightly as a Protestant democracy, family values, hard work, and all that. It was a bit overplayed, but it's true.
But this is a secular tradition, and even the greatest Catholic painter in the tradition, Vermeer, painted very few paintings that had any religious themes.
True. And well, Vermeer was a convert from Protestantism for the sake of his marriage. And apart from one picture, he never painted anything particularly Catholic. Another way to look at it is Rubens, the greatest painter of the Catholic Church at the time. Nobody in America wanted him until really the 1920s or 30s.
And now Rubens is very well represented in America.
Absolutely,
so there must have been a lot of those on the market as well.
Well, that's part of it. And he's a great colorist, painterly painter. And he took off in the 1930s when you see brushwork and color like his. Yes.
Henry James was one of the first people to review the collection. I didn't know that he wrote art criticism.
Yeah.
What did he have to say about it?
He actually did so anonymously, and I'm not sure why. Maybe because he was a novice at it, in the Atlantic Monthly of 1872. And he expressed great admiration for the whole thing, and particularly the Dutch. But embedded in that commentary were a number of backhanded compliments. He says about the portraitist Vanderhelst that nature would lay her hand on his shoulder and say, well, one must choose for the long run. This is a guy we can trust.
Well, and Vanderhelst is not considered one of the great artists.
But no.
the museum's collection also had works from other parts of the world. There was an attempt to build a pretty decent Italian Renaissance collection at the time, wasn't there?
Well, in 1871, those pictures were about 40% Dutch. They dated from 16th through the 18th century, so it was a general selection within certain parameters of taste.
Well, 40% Dutch is really overrepresentation.
Yeah. True.
But that's because that was what the taste was at the time, perhaps? And do you think that
It's partly, I think, the nature of American society, which we touched on already, and then, of course, the fact that contemporary painting in France, etc., Courbet, Manet, Impressionism just dawning, very much favored nature, also our own Hudson River landscapes.
And then Thomas Aikens almost harkens back to the Dutch
tradition.
Oh, he's
like the Rembrandt of America, yeah.
So what do you think this show reveals about the changing tastes in art over the centuries, not only over the centuries that are that we've owned these paintings, but over the centuries in general? Because these artists, Vermeer was successful, then he wasn't successful. Rembrandt had high points and low points during his career. I don't know whether Hals always did well, but some of these other artists were considered probably more important in the 17th century than either of those three.
It very much ebbs and flows with the taste of individual cultures. You could say that the first important Dutch paintings in America were the Leiden School with very finicky execution, but that really had to do with the French Revolution dumping works onto the market.
One of the most famous paintings, perhaps the centerpiece of the exhibit, is Rembrandt's painting of
Aristotle
contemplating the bust of Homer, and you give it a wall in itself.
Yeah.
I remember when the Met bought that painting. What was it, $2.5 million?
1961, 2.3.
And everybody was just shocked that so much money would be spent on a painting. I don't know what that painting is worth today, even with inflation built in, but I suspect it's many times.
Well, if it were at auction, I don't know, 140, 150.
So that also suggests something else about changing attitudes about what art is worth, what great art is worth.
Right. You also see in that period some shockingly high prices paid for, you know, things that turned out to be rather mediocre. So it's hard to convert the currency, but there are, you know, extraordinary gestures made with money that reflect changing values.
You only have one Rembrandt self-portrait on display, that from a man who painted seemingly hundreds of them.
And, of course, there's a great one at the Frick Collection. The interesting thing about Rembrandt's self-portraits, there are about 40 genuine ones in the world. There are at least 45 by his immediate followers. And what that means is there was a greater demand for his self-portraits from his own studio than he could supply.
You've relied a lot on donors. That the painting we just talked about, the Aristotle, is the only one that the Met actually had to come up with all the money for. But
right. the only Rembrandt or not Rembrandt, once called Rembrandt, we ever bought.
Did you have to cajole donors over the years? I'm talking about way before you were at the Met.
Yeah.
To part with their prized possessions?
It never feels that way, you know. I think people really have, and that's one of the messages of the exhibition, is how generous and deliberate, and many people who rose to prominence in New York themselves feel like they're giving something back to the city, but what they mean by that's the culture. We're not the City Museum of New York. We're a private foundation.
And even people who don't live in New York sometimes give collections to the Metropolitan Museum of Art.
Not as commonly.
Well, we just had this new exhibit of abstract expressionism
Right.
donated by somebody who lived in Chicago.
Right, indeed.
There's a slideshow, as I said, of some of the paintings from this exhibit, The Age of Rembrandt, Dutch paintings in the Metropolitan Museum of Art, on our show page. But go to the museum and see the 228 works, some of them among the greatest masterpieces ever produced. And my great thanks to the Metz curator of European paintings, Walter Liedtke, for being my guest today on the show.
Thank you so much.